We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
It is about being a resilient organization. And that is really the ability for a company to quickly adapt and have the agility to restore critical operations or services.
Is that something you set and forget? Is that something you have to practice?
I think it's something you have to practice. And what I sometimes see companies doing is not always the right people are involved in the practice sessions.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. The digital transformation has ushered in a new era of data, which allows retailers to work smarter, innovate faster, and serve customers better. This influx of data also makes a company's cybersecurity measures even more challenging and more important. Today, we have the opportunity to talk about the complex cybersecurity landscape with Sean Joyce, U.S. cybersecurity and privacy leader at PwC U.S. Sean works with clients across all industries, providing strategic guidance and advising on incident breach response and cybersecurity. I'm very fortunate today to be joined by my co-host, my friend and my colleague, Sarah Rand. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning, Bill.
How are you?
I'm always good.
Why are you good particularly today?
Well, you said that we always talk to the most fascinating leaders, and I think we're checking that box times 10 today.
Yes, we are, because we have Sean Joyce. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Sarah.
And welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So, Sean, you have quite the background, and so we're going to start there. Today, you're with PwC. You're leading up this extraordinary, very large group practice at PwC on cybersecurity, but you had to start somewhere to get there. Give us a little bit of background for you.
How far back do we want to go?
Go as far as you like. Elementary school, probably.
So way back when I graduated from Boston College, I was in their School of Management and majored in computer science. So when I
knew that wasn't a Southern accent, so go ahead.
So when I came out of BC, I was a programmer analyst for Raytheon Data Systems, and then I had a job at Arthur Andersen in IT consulting, and then I went back to business school at Amos Tuck Dartmouth, and I did a little internship on Wall Street, and then I took a right turn for 27 years into the FBI.
So, you know, cybersecurity as, you know, and kind of a business in and of itself, it's so incredibly important, but it's so new almost, isn't it? I mean, it's been there on the horizon for a long time, but just where it's so important to the businesses that exist today, probably more so than it was just even a decade ago.
I think you're right, but I don't know if I would classify it as new as much as a quickly evolving industry. It's interesting. I was over in Israel about a month ago and looking at hundreds of startups that are really being incubated over there, and then looking as their primary market, the United States. And it's fascinating to me the changes that I've even seen in my 5.5 years at PwC. So it's a market, I think, that evolves incredibly fast. And at the same time, it is challenging, right? And, you know, when you were talking about, you know, new, and I was mentioning not so much, but changing, I think as we've seen in the news, like people, when we talk about breaches, I think people are a little bit immune now.
I know. I just had this conversation the other day with somebody. I mean, you know, it's, we give all of this information, and I remember the first breaches, people was like, whoa, you know, it's the headline, the news, it's, you know, news flash, push notifications. And now it's kind of like, oh, there's a breach and 12 million, you know, but anyway, moving on.
Guess I need to change my password.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's, it is an amazing phenomenon.
It is, and that's where I think over the last year or so, the reputational risk that used to come with these breaches, and you can name, you know, some of the breaches that we've all seen in the headlines, I think that's changed because we've seen in a relatively short period of time, let's say 6 months, that the stock price has really bounced back to where it was. I think the issue right now is about business operations and business interruption. So when you look at the NotPetya that hit a couple of companies, obviously the business interruption that was caused by that and the loss really is quite different than a breach that was, the purpose was data exfiltration. And when we talk about personal identifiable information, some of those other things. So I think the industry is pivoting a little bit. I think the U.S. government is talking about, you know, this term, we talk about this term called cyber resiliency and really that adaptability and agility to recover your critical business operations.
You talk about the evolution. Is it fair to say that it is evolving faster and faster? How does a company keep up?
It is extremely difficult. And I think in the industry, you see, you know, we went through a phase where a lot of outsourcing happened. Now you see, I think, a lot of consolidation and a lot of things being brought in-house. Then you see it going, certain items being outsourced. I don't know if anyone is doing a good job keeping up. And part of that isn't anyone's fault. It's really about what I think in the industry is referred to as the adversary is adapting as quickly. So, you know, this thing called cyber, we struggle in many different areas, and I would say particularly in the legislative area, right? So in the legislative realm, you're really looking at a lot of folks, I think, that don't understand, and I think we have an obligation to educate them. But I just see in a legislative, there's so many challenges there where it's not just geographically based, right? Cyber is really global and crosses boundaries like, you know, nothing else. And I just think we're struggling in a lot of different areas.
Seems to me that the problem that we have is that we fix a problem, but the fraudsters, the people that are perpetrating these crimes, basically, are always not one step ahead, but as soon as we fix one thing, they figure something else out, some other way around whatever fence we put up to try to prevent these things from happening.
I think you're right, but there's a little bit of, I think, a lack of understanding of where a lot of these, I would say some of the best malware and tools are developed that they use. When I look at where the best hackers are in the world, it's really focused in three countries. And there aren't thousands and thousands, there's several hundred. And these folks really develop the tools and mechanisms that they really proliferate and sell to other places. So I compare it to any of those listeners out there that are as old as I am. If you remember those letters that you used to receive to guarantee
still
you 1,000%.
I'm waiting for my gold.
Still got it.
It hasn't arrived. But,
well, I love interacting with them, by the way. That's the fun part. Yeah. You know, please do this. And I'll be like, well, when is the most convenient time? It's fun, actually.
Right. But that's just gone digital.
Yeah.
You know, the focus, it seems to me, by the government, which obviously it should be, is on critical infrastructure. Does that keep you up at night? I mean, that kind of threat?
It does from the standpoint of, I think there are certain industries that are not as well fortified as they should be. When you look at when I look at the different sectors out there, I think there are 16 identified critical infrastructure sectors. When you look at financial services, I think they are sort of the veterans on the block with some of the defense contractors and some of the tech companies, where they have been over now, I would say, decades used to these attacks and are very mature. I think many of the other industries and sectors are not at that same level of maturity. And, you know, that concerns me. And a lot of it, you know, the United States is different, as you know. We're, you know, a free market economy and a lot of...
open society.
That's right. Critical infrastructure is segmented and balkanized. And I think it's difficult to get your hands around.
What are some of the cyber threats that retailers specifically should be focusing on?
We still have, you know, some of the old threats that that exist, like point of sale malware. There are still the adversaries out there that, as you know, you go into some stores and you can't use the chip, and you still have to swipe for one reason or another. Either the chip part isn't working or something else. So there's still a lot of theft being done at point of sale. I think we've seen, as obviously we've seen a sharp increase in e-commerce, a lot is done at what is characterized as card not present. And we see a lot of the online, I would say, groups that are targeting, right, those payment areas and doing the scraping off the web pages, or trying to redirect folks to a, you know, a man in the middle is what they call it type scenario where they're stealing that information. So you're going to see more and more of that as, you know, EMV and the chip really makes it much more difficult, because on the chip, really, there's not to get too detailed, but there's a transaction actually number that changes each time when you use the chip, unlike when you use the magnetic strip on the back of your card. So it's much more difficult to do that point of sale theft. But I think when we talk about card not present, I think we're going to see really that increase dramatically. And I think we're going to see a lot more losses.
One of the things, and just for our listeners' sake, we always hear the expression, the dark web. What is that?
The dark web is really, I would say, a part of the World Wide Web, or for let's put it in layman's terms, just the internet, where it's not a known web address. So there are many, that octet that you see there, which is, you know, 2.8.50. whatever it is, right? It's something typically on the internet when you do that, right? You know, your website comes up, www.nrf.org or whatever it is. Please correct me.
.com.
Thank you. nrf.com. There we go. That is associated with, right? It goes to what's called a domain name server, and it basically directs the person to your website. On the dark web, there are these web addresses that go to these other sites that there's no way for folks to know unless they're involved in some of these things. So it's in a lot of times, these sites are hijacked. They're using them without the knowledge of the true owner and something else. So, and you need passwords and other things to be able to access that.
So, you know, a lot of the breaches that are taking place or that have taken place, so there's breaches and people selling information, consumer information, but state-sponsored, that's different, correct?
It is different from the standpoint of capabilities. One of the changes that I think we've seen, and I don't think the retail industry is immune from it, is that we've seen the nation states pivot a little bit. And I look at the nation states, you know, I characterize them as sort of the predictables and the unpredictables. I think you're seeing some of these nation states actually do it for profit, which is a very unusual, I would say, evolution in some of what the nation states are doing. I think, you know, I would say 10 years ago, there was a group of nation states that were very active. At times, it's for intellectual property. At times, it is also for their plans regarding acquisitions and their growth as a company. And then we've seen countries like North Korea and others that are actually trying to do it for profit. It's actually to raise money, which is fascinating in one sense. So, I mean, it's one of those things, and SWIFT, in fairness, has done a great job post that. But I think the ultimate bottom line there, and, you know, Sarah, when you were asking me about nation states, it's if a nation state wants to get in, they're most likely going to get in. They have the resources and they have the time, and typically they have the funding. So when you look at some of these countries, and, you know, when I name these countries, I'm not here to pass judgment.
Sure.
It's just more of what has been attributed to them. But Iran and North Korea, I think historically, have done some things, right, that you wouldn't typically associate with, I think people, when they think of nation state activity, think of intellectual property, patents, those type of things, where they are looking to cause mayhem.
Yeah.
Right. And then for profit.
Okay. So talk a little bit about what retailers can do defensively. You've talked about resiliency. What do they do if a nation state can do whatever they want?
I think it comes back to that term that you mentioned, right? You hit the nail on the head. And it is about being a resilient organization. And that is really the ability for a company to quickly adapt and have the agility to restore critical operations or services. And we talked a little bit before about it's important for a company to understand and know what their critical operations and business services are, and then to be able to understand where, in a virtual and physical world, where the resources and assets and data and applications reside that are part of those critical operations and business services.
Is that something you set and forget? Is that something you have to practice?
I think it's something you have to practice. And what I sometimes see companies doing is not always the right people are involved in the practice sessions. So I think typically you'll see the CISO that's involved, and oftentimes he or she are the ones responsible for setting up the practice sessions.
CISO being your chief security officer?
Chief information security officer. Okay. But what I sometimes don't see is other members of the C-suite, the CEO, the COO, the chief risk officer, if the company has one, those folks really being involved in those practice sessions and understanding, right, what's involved and what's acceptable. So we were talking about earlier, you know, do you have a e-commerce site that is X percent of your revenue that is considered a critical business operation? Are you okay with that being down for a week, for a day, for an hour, right? And going back to that. So everyone has to understand the effort that's involved, and you truly do have to practice and make sure that's happening. So, you know, currently that's something that's really important to us, and we're helping, I would say, a couple of Fortune 10 companies really deal with that and make sure they have that resiliency built in.
But given the types of cybersecurity risks, there can't be a one size fits all. I mean, and so, you know, the smaller businesses, how do they, the bigger ones, like your, you know, top 10, Fortune top 10, they have all of the ability in the world to kind of prepare to respond. How about the smaller businesses? What can they do?
I actually, you know, Bill, I think you raise a great point. And they, I think the small to medium sized businesses are often ignored. And, you know, you see, I think, some of the industry consortiums and other, like the Global Cyber Alliance, that are actually putting out cybersecurity toolkits for small and medium-sized businesses. And I think they have to leverage some of those assets out there. And I think you're going to see a pooling of resources, right? Because there's no way, and you said it, where they just don't have the budget or the resources or the skill set to really deal with some of these threats. And as we all know, I think that also relates to when you look at the supply chain of retailers, right? And that's where I think some of the weaknesses exist. And a lot of times the retailers don't hold their third-party vendors and parts of their supply chain to the same standards. And I think we've seen the result of that in some of the major breaches in the retail industry.
What can consumers do to protect themselves, to protect their information that they're providing, you know, online, and to, but it doesn't matter if it's a business or just a site, what can they do to protect themselves?
I think it's about being aware. And you mentioned a second ago about risk. And this discussion should all, it's about risk. It's not about, hey, the listeners out there, like, holy mackerel, there are a lot of things going on. It's about being aware of the threat out there and then translating that threat to a risk. And does that risk actually apply to me as a retail company? And addressing it from a risk-based perspective, I think, is key. But when you, to answer your question about what can the individual consumer do? I think there are some really basic elementary things, and it goes to, we hear over and over about a good password. A lot of times retailers have loyalty programs and some other types of programs, and people, because you have so many accounts and passwords, pick that retailer store. You say the store and then your first name. That's not a good password. Right? So I say to people, an easy thing to remember is use a password phrase. Right? I like to shop on Wednesdays. Something you can remember that's very easy. The name of my cat is, right? Those type of password phrases, they're easy to remember.
Not just the name of the cat. The name of my cat is. Yes. Right.
Right. But I would say make it a little more, but still those password
Bill's
type
dog's
phrases.
Name is Rocco. Okay.
Thankfully, he's not any password.
But simple things. And then when you go to a website, being aware of, is it actually being done in a secure manner? When you look up in the right corner, does it say HTTPS? Right, and you know that encryption is being used. So I think some basic things. But we all hear this over and over, and I unfortunately have to confess, sometimes on some of these, you know, retailers that you try to do, I just want to do a one-time thing. Well, you do a one-time thing and you forget.
Right.
So it just really comes back to the basics.
You know, and I do think that to a degree, people are just growing. And we talked about this at the top of the shows. People are just growing accustomed to it. It's kind of like, well, there was a breach. It doesn't really impact me. I'll change my password. Well, it's kind of a little too late at that point, I would think. But Sean, this has been extraordinarily interesting, if not a bit disturbing. But actually, I think that one of the things that is reassuring is the fact that we've got people like you, PwC and other companies that are working with retailers, large companies, to make sure that their systems are protected and vis-a-vis that the consumer is protected as well. So we appreciate that work. If people wanted to learn more about what PwC is doing in the space, where would they go to learn more?
That is a great question.
I would assume you just go to pwc.org or pwc.com. pwc.org.
We are for profit, Bill.
Yeah, you are. But you're doing great work.
No, absolutely. You can go to our website and then go into the cybersecurity and privacy. And there's a lot of, I think, helpful information and resources that folks can learn about.
Now, Sean, even though we're almost out of time, we have one more segment, and you may not be familiar with this. And we call it Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
For this segment, we're going to ask you some quick questions, and we simply want you to answer with the first thing that comes to mind.
What's your password? No.
We're not going to ask that question. So,
Roscoe.
Yeah, great dog. So don't think about it, just answer. So are you ready?
I guess so.
Sarah, start us off.
Who was your childhood hero?
Batman.
Pizza or burger?
Pizza.
Ideal vacation?
Beach.
Must see TV. Say something like CSI or something like
that. No, I'm not a big TV watcher.
That's all right.
All right. What's always in your fridge?
Jeopardy. Jeopardy is my TV. I'm
sure.
A big Jeopardy fan.
Makes you smarter.
Go ahead, Sarah.
What's always in your fridge for 200?
Milk.
What's the last magazine you bought?
Economist. I have a subscription.
Very good.
What kind of superpower would you have?
Everyone has a superpower, right?
Mm-hmm.
Evaluating people.
Very good. So what is the best advice you've ever received?
Marry my wife.
Excellent. She can listen to this program. We've got at least one listener. Sean, this is absolutely fantastic. And again, we really appreciate your joining us for this episode of Retail Gets Real. We look forward to getting you back sometime. And we're going to post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. Thanks for listening. And if you like Retail Gets Real, please make sure to tell your colleagues, your friends, your family about the show, or give us a rating on your podcast app. Again, thanks for listening. Take care.